And that's why this, what's going on right now, like, could be a subtle warning shot. Like, if this is what you're going to sign up for, if you're not going to pay me now, this is the way the year's going to go. And if I have little nagging things, I got to protect myself. And, you know, I just think that's the way it goes. And logically, if you had that much money on the line, you would handle it that way, too. I think both things can be true. Like, I think he can be nicked up. And I can, and I think that the contract might affect how he's handling that, you know. And so it's sort of a preview for how the year is going to go, because every time he has an ankle or a hamstring or anything happens and he sits out a game or two games, those questions are going to arise.
This is Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson on WEEI.
And that's why you want to get this done now, before the season starts.
Let me tell you something about that comment from Burt Breer there. The Patriots, they'd handle it the same way. If they were, look, they are shrewd businessmen, all right? Christian Gonzalez is being a shrewd businessman. If he, you know, oh, if he's a little nicked up, I don't think I can go today because he's got so much on the line. They got to know, they know that. They got to appreciate it because they're wired the same way. Don't kid yourself.
What do you mean? They brought you on a trip to Florida and got the deal done? That was nice. Why did they do that?
That was nice.
Get Gonzo down there. What the hell?
Yeah. No, you're right. That was nice.
Well, you can give us a call at 617-779-7937. Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson, also on the Odyssey app as well. And joining us right now in studio, a guy that we got to spend some time together down there at the old Jimmy Fund Telethon. He actually brought up some great stuff that we ended up asking Chad Tracy about those later report times, which is interesting. But also, he is a guy who has been down there with Mego at all these practices with the Patriots. And Justin Turpin, top-tier Terp, joins us in studio. Terp, what do you think about all of this? Like, when you hear the Schefter report and you hear what Burt is saying and when you see Devin Weatherspoon's contract, where do you think this all stands? What's going on behind the scenes right now?
I mean, it feels like the framework was put in place, whether they like it or not, when the Witherspoon deal was done. It's not going to be much drastic either which way, either more or less. It feels like the framework is done, and now it comes down to the guarantees. What? It happened over the weekend, so probably looking at like 5 or 6 days since the deal was done. Witherspoon was done. So now, you know, the clock's kind of started to tick.
But I think it's funny if Gonzo was listening to the car, you just said, oh, the framework's done except for the guarantees.
Right. That's the whole thing.
That's a big part of it.
Patriots are saying the framework's done, no doubt. Right.
It should be. Right. I mean, everyone kind of expected those to be very much in the same neighborhood. And one is done now, so this one should not be much far behind.
Can I ask you, Turk, because we were just discussing the, you know, Witherspoon and Gonzalez obviously have the same agent. We've been talking about that for a while. Do you see any scenario in which the same agent goes to another client at the same position who seem to be rated almost equally and asks for a decent amount more than the last guy did? Like, I just don't, I mean, is there a situation where you think maybe Gonzalez wants a sizable amount more than what Witherspoon got?
I mean, he might, if we're going off what Tommy Karn was reporting, that he's trying to set the market for next year, but that's just not how these things work. And it's certainly not going to work with how this ownership group operates. So if he's expecting to get it done that way and he's looking at next year's money as opposed to this year's money, I mean, maybe that's a big reason for a holdup, but I don't see him getting his way if that's the case.
Yeah, well I would say this. There's information data that maybe – that we're not privy to, that the agent could use. Like, you sit there, I used the DVOA when Christian Gonzalez was playing versus when he wasn't playing. That was a totally different defense. Like, if Christian Gonzalez, if he's not playing in that defense, they are not even close to being the same defense they are when he's not playing. That's what I'm showing to the – now, I don't know if Devin Witherspoon has the same impact in team's DVOA or not when he's on the field versus off, but if I'm Christian Gonzalez's agent, I don't think it's just – look, you can't just assume that the player in Christian Gonzalez sees it the same way you do, Rich, or that his agent sees Christian Gonzalez as the same way Devin Witherspoon, you know, he saw it with Devin Witherspoon. So I just don't think it's that cut and dry.
I'll tell you what, Ted, throw on the tape from these two joint practices and you can see, like, okay, they need Christian Gonzalez out there.
Didn't our man Marcus Jones have a couple of picks?
Yeah. And one of them was tipped, and like, they were forcing turnovers, but the Eagles were also without their top two wide receivers. Devontae Smith did not participate in full team 11-on-11s, and neither did Mekhi Lemon, their first round pick there. So it really was two on twos, like the second stringers on second stringers, and you can see they were moving the ball.
And this last point on this, I would say if I'm Christian Gonzalez's agent, I'm going in there and I'm saying, you don't have the pass rush. that Devin Witherspoon has.
Great point.
So without Christian Gonzalez back there and not having a pass rush, you're in big trouble as a defense. So he, to me, is much more valuable. That being Christian Gonzalez is more valuable to his defense than Devin Witherspoon is for his defense.
That was also pretty obvious. Is the big question this offseason has been, where are they going to get pressure from the edges, right? Like, Gabe Backus, you have high expectations for him. He's still settling in, obviously missed.
What do you think of his preseason game?
I thought it was up and down. I thought he was too aggressive at times, but the mistakes I thought were very coachable, like specifically in the read option. There was a couple times where he went and tackled the running back because he's being over-aggressive. Like, you can work with that stuff. You can see the intangibles that he has, the motor, the aggression, just the tenacity that he plays with. So I think there are, obviously, the tools are in place to work with him, but he needs to be coached up a little bit. And Vrabel's very hard on him. And Gabe Backus was talking about it the other day that he likes it. He likes that Vrabel's coaching him hard. So I have high expectations for him, and I think you should. I mean, they traded up in the second round to get this guy. There probably is some expectation that he contributes this year.
Oh, not only this year, but I think certainly right away. My guess is they drafted him where they did so that he becomes a full-time starter, I think, by the middle of the season. That's my guess.
Terp, do you think that there is a kicker problem on this team?
I'm not going to jump into that off just one preseason game, especially because I think the first two are really testing his range. He missed what it was 54 and 56, and then he missed obviously the go-ahead, what would have been the go-ahead that was closer in the 40 range. But Vrabel tested him on Saturday, that first practice after the preseason game, right in front of on the small, skinny goalpost, which are probably about half of a regular goalpost, and he was 6 for 6. And he has been good in the two-minute drill the last 2 days. They've ended those drives on field goals, and he's made those as well. So he has been better since then. Obviously, people are going to look at that because, one, it's your kicker, and I think that's a very important part of the game, obviously. And, two, there is no competition. They obviously, Borgalis had a great rookie year last year. They didn't bring in any competition in training camp. So that is another reason people are really kind of keying in on this. But I thought he's been responding pretty well ever since what one unfolded last Thursday.
I love hearing the A.J. Brown stuff. But and I know we have to break here real soon, Rich. But the Dobbs stuff is encouraging, too. I want to get Terp's take on that, how he looked today. Because you know I've been a little skeptical. But it sounds like he had his best day yet.
Yeah, he's been absolutely awesome. Really, the last week or two, he's been really developing his chemistry with Drake May. And Drake May was talking about it after practice today, just the way he's able to break his routes, the way he's able to kind of turn his body side to side and make these contested catches. You're seeing, you guys probably saw it or online or heard about it yesterday, the play of the day of Drake May throwing off his back foot up the sideline at A.J. Brown. Romeo Dobbs ran essentially the same route concept and was also open. So you're really seeing these two wide receivers that they went out and got and gave a lot of money to Romeo Dobbs. These guys coming to life here and really making their impact on the offense. It looks like the vision that they had is really coming to life.
All right, Terp, can you stick around for the break?
Of course.
Awesome. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk Drake, A.J. Brown, and what could be the biggest Achilles heel of this Patriots team this season. We will get to that right after this. 2 minutes, we'll be back.
I think we got a lot of great work. I think, the biggest thing is, that's a good football team over there. And I think just not riding the roller coaster. I feel like we had some good periods that we were, attacking them and, had some good plays. And we had some periods where we got to, continue the competitive stamina. And that's the thing about this game. It can't just be, one play here, one play there. You got to string some, plays together in a row. And I felt like, we did that more yesterday than we did today. So just getting back, I know it's tough down there in the red zone. A lot of bodies in a short amount of space. But, I feel like we could have, done more in the red zone. And I think that's something for us to, learn. It's one of our focuses this year to be better in the red zone. So we got some work to do.
It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson. 617-779-7937. And that is the voice of a gentleman that will be on our show every week this NFL season. When does that start?
Maybe Monday. Could be Monday. Patriots Monday. We will have a quarterback on. Not sure if it's going to be our man Tommy Cutlets or it's going to be Drake.
Could we get Tommy Cutlet's agent on instead? And the whole time we're just going to ask him, are you Italian?
I mean, we could have Joe Milton on, too, if you want. I'd call him. I'd call my man up.
What's he doing? Is he going to make that roster down there?
He better be starting this week. I hope so.
That would be nice. We have with us Top Tier Terp, of course, Justin Turpin, who writes for WEEI.com.
Twitch chat says Terp looking angelic in white today.
Ooh, I like that.
It's a white outfit.
A little Scotty Schefflerish.
Yeah, he is.
You think so? Oh, yeah. I've gotten that before.
That's what you are.
Hottie Scheffler.
Well done. Scheffler, yes. Okay, so obviously Drake May, it's been fun watching him and A.J. Brown and the connection that the two of them seem to have already. My question is, and I believe that this is going to be a storyline the entire season long, is he going to be able to stay standing? this offensive line has a bunch of question marks, and I don't know how deep it is. What do you believe? Do you believe it's going to be as big as an issue as I'm making it right now? It just, to me, seems like that might be one of the most problematic things to watch this season with this team.
I feel like that's always been kind of the default issue that we've been going back to for the Patriots for the last couple of years, is how the offensive line is going to look. And against a really strong defensive front with the Eagles, they've looked really good. I think they're, some of the one-on-one stuff isn't as great. And Ted and I were just talking, that's not real football, not, the one-on-one.
Nope.
It eliminates any nuance.
I always feel bad for guys that get, you know, beat up on one-on-ones because it's not real football. It's not how it's played.
I love watching that, though.
It's fun to watch, but it doesn't teach you
it doesn't.
Well, that's real. A pass rusher and a tackle, that happens one-on-one during every game, right?
You have there's so much more. You have a guy next to you. You have the quarterback that's holding the ball back there.
Hey, you didn't play the game like I did.
You're right. What am I?
On the 11-11s, like, they've been great. I had yesterday one sack. Elijah Vera Tucker missed a stunt and Drake May got sacked. And then today, Caleb Lomu came in for Morgan Moses towards the end of practice. They kind of gave Moses the second half of the practice off, and he got beat for one. But that's a rookie. Like, these guys, the plays that, for the most part, when you're watching these joint practices, it will be apparent if the offensive line is struggling. If the offensive line in the story is the story, that would be apparent. And I haven't felt that once.
And I feel like, Terp, that the offensive line has been the story for the last three training camps.
Right. That's what I was saying at the beginning. Like, it's been kind of the default. Everyone goes back to the offensive line. Well, last year, it's like, you have two rookies on the offensive line. How does that pan out? This year, I feel like we're not talking a ton about it. Maybe that's because they've brought in more talent this year than really in recent memory. They have the best, you know, pass catcher / skill player since Rob Gronkowski and A.J. Brown. Drake May coming off the season he had last year, obviously, of the running backs. Like, and that's another thing. When you're looking at the skill positions on this team, there's really not one group that you're really shaky on. Like, when you're looking around on the starting lineup, it's like there is not one weak link on
tight end.
I feel good about Hunter Henry, and clearly they do if they're willing to give him the extension.
Reed's doing a good job.
Yeah, he looked great. He actually got a ton of reps today with the ones, and he's shown flashes as both a pass blocker, a run blocker, and a pass catcher. Like, he's a really athletic guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's a very capable blocker.
What would you call this offense? Is it weaponized? Is this going to be a high powered offense? Would you say?
I think it is.
The ability to be called those types of things.
I think it certainly does. When you're looking at the receiving threats that they brought in this year, obviously with Romeo Doubs and AJ Brown, you got Ramondre Stevenson. Stevenson, I think people are kind of sleeping on a little bit. He was their best offensive player, not named Drake May, for the entire second half of the year.
Right,
really, when he came back from the injury, he was one of their best offensive players. Mm-hmm. And he looks great in camp this year. It's very clear that the Patriots view him as the starter. He's been first up every time. He's been getting a majority of the reps. It's probably about like 65-35, somewhere in there, with him and Travion Henderson. But I think people are kind of sleeping on Ramondre Stevenson and what he's capable of. Like, this is a really, really deep offense in a quarterback who obviously had an unbelievable season last year and was the runner-up for MVP.
Real quick, Rich, I just want to ask this one last question for me. What have you seen from the quarterback? I feel like they need to weaponize the quarterback and say, like, boots, rollouts, waggles, get him on the run, outside the pocket, play actions, more play actions.
There's been a lot of play action.
Are you seeing that, and what is that part of his game look like?
Yeah, I think the play action's been very prominent in the offense, and same with the bootlegs. They've been doing a lot of those.
I don't think you're
going to see a ton of design runs just because it is training camp. You're obviously not going to put the quarterback in that position, certainly not in joint practices. So I'm sure there will be more design runs as the season goes on, but we haven't seen a ton of those yet. But there's certainly been an emphasis on the play action as well as the bootlegs, and the bootlegs have looked good. I mean, the tight ends have found space in those. Eli Raerden, I mean, it wasn't Drake May, but we saw that in the preseason. It got wiped out by a penalty, but that was one of the ones that we've seen. 20-something yard gainer, an X play there that he gets wide open on a bootleg. So the offense has looked very, very good. And, you know, it should. It's for the first time there's continuity. For the first time in a long time, there's continuity with the offensive coordinator, with the quarterback. You're bringing in more weapons around him. Like, this is kind of what you've been looking for. How many offensive coordinators, like, the first, what, four of the last five years have been different offensive coordinators? Like, there's finally continuity. So, yeah, this is kind of to be expected.
So, Terp, I've been rooting for Kayshon Boutte to make this roster, but it looks like there was an injury today that might actually telegraphed where he's going to end up getting traded, and that is Jaden Higgins suffered a torn ACL during a joint practice with the Raiders. He's with the Texans, and that's Caserio running the factory down there, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So doesn't that almost seem like the answers right now are being given to us, like that's where Kayshon Booty is going to end up, is going to the Texans.
It certainly makes a ton of sense, but what are they willing to give? Like, if I'm the Patriots, if they're offering you just a sixth round pick, unless your intention is doing right by him for being a good soldier, for, you know, coming here, showing up and being a productive player and wanting him to be able to spread his wings and make the most of his contract year here. If that's their intention, then that's one thing. But if you feel like you can find ways to him be on the field and be productive, why would you trade him for like a sixth round pick?
I agree.
At this point, I don't think you're necessarily getting a player.
I mean, it'd have to be at least a fourth.
That's probably where I'd be at too. I mean, look how good he was for them last year. There's a very obvious connection with Drake May. He's proven that he can be very productive. And I think the additions of Dobbs and Brown, if you can have him on the field with them, they stretch the field for him to get behind defenses and make more deep plays. So I wouldn't really just be rushing him out. And I get it. Like, if your intention is to do right by him, that's one thing. But they should probably be putting themselves first, because every move they made this offseason was with the now in mind. Winning now. Going out and trading for A.J. Brown. Sure, that's a multi-year thing. He's also, that is a now move. He's in his prime now. You're trying to win now. Kayshon Booty can help you win now. I'd keep him around.
I got to know, Terp. Just tell me about A.J. Brown. Just tell me about what you've been seeing and just like how things are fitting in down there.
It certainly looks like this is the number one wide receiver they expected him to come out and be. And
awesome.
You know,
he's
making plays in the deep ball game, the short game. That slant concept with him is unstoppable, and especially in the red zone. There's just no slowing that
down. That's a carryover from the Eagles.
Right.
He was great with that.
Right. So I think this is exactly what they envisioned when they went out and traded the two first-round picks. And I think a lot of people are looking at that price and like, oh, A.J. Brown at this age with this knee injury, he looks totally fine, and he looks like the type of player that they were envisioning when they went out and made that move.
Mm. Does that make you feel all nice and tingly inside there, Ted? I mean, I got to be honest. Yeah. I can't wait. It's the small little videos, Terp, that are being put up right now of Drake to A.J. Brown. I mean, this is going to be fun.
You've got to see this guy in person. He's enormous.
He's got muscles on top of muscles.
It's outrageous. Yeah, he's huge.
He
does.
He's like an action figure. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. He's like the Hulk.
Yeah, he is.
Terp, can I ask, do you think there'll be any issues with A.J. Brown as far as if he starts feeling he's not getting as many targets as he should?
It's funny because this has been like a hot topic and a lot of conversation around that. And obviously, A.J. Brown's past welcomes that conversation, but didn't we do this all last year with Stephon Diggs?
Yeah.
Nothing happened, at least on the field. Nothing really came out of that.
It's a court cases.
Did this happen?
Been shipped out.
I said on the field. I said on the field.
At the end. Yeah. At the very, very end.
There was stuff off the field, isn't it? Right when he first got here on the boat, the court case at the end. But on the field, he was a leader. They got way more out of him than they originally bargained for last year.
True.
Is that Vrabel? Is that Vrabel?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm kind of getting at. It's like, think about A.J. Brown's career. Was this ever a conversation when he was in Tennessee? Mm-hmm. Granted, he was a younger player, but
he respects Vrabes.
He respects
these guys,
Vrabel.
These players respect him, and they come in here. They don't want to, you know, and you know what? They respect, I think, the Patriots and what this program has done for the last 25 years as well. So that factor that in. I just want to real highlight, there might be people in their cars going, really, slant routes? You're getting excited about slant routes? When Turt brings up the slant route with A.J. Brown, yeah, because it's such a high – success rate, if you can get it figured out with that player, key fourth downs, key red zone possessions, the slant can be a killer. And you know what? You can, and AJ is the kind of guy that can take a slant route to the house. So a slant route, hitting, being, you know, having that timed up and being that being a successful part of this offense is, to me, is a great, great sign, because of it's a chain mover. It's you can put points on the board. It can be a play in which he can go to the house with the right timing. So I like hearing that from you, Terp, that's something that you've seen in the arsenal that's working.
And to that point, I know a lot. Obviously, yesterday, Drake May and the offense were the big talker, how efficient they were, how easily they moved the chains against a really strong Eagles defense. Today wasn't necessarily the same, but it's also red zone periods, right? That's to be expected when you move things into the red zone. There's not as much space. Also, the Eagles go back to their team hotel yesterday, watch the film. Again, this is a really talented defensive team. Like, they're going to figure things out.
Defense.
You don't see teams back-to-back in the NFL. That doesn't happen. So it is a little bit different. But on one of Drake May's interceptions, both were targeted towards A.J. Brown. The first one that he threw that was right on, like, it was kind of like an outright near the pylon in the end zone. It was fourth and five. Like, he's looking to A.J. Brown on fourth down, And it was a forced throw, yes, but why don't you force that throw in practice on a fourth and five? What, are you just going to eat it? Like, make the throw. See what you can do.
It would be good to not give up a touchdown. That would be...
Well, the picks, it was all red zone period, so they weren't, like, chasing them down. You know, it was picked off at the 1 yard line. They're not going to chase them down. The whistle blow right away.
They called that pick six on the one.
They would have caught him.
The pass was thrown, like, the ball was probably on, like, the eight. The pass was intercepted right next to the pylon on the one. Like, they're not going to waste their energy chasing this guy down. The whistle was already blown.
What are they, Wilson Contreras? They're not going to run it out?
Exactly.
By the way, AJ hates Jalen Hurts, huh?
They did talk today.
Really?
They met up in the backfield. Yeah, there's a video on Instagram. Yeah, there's a video on our Instagram of that. Yeah, they very brief dap up in conversation in the backfield. You know who else was down there after practice? It was Christian Gonzalez.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, he was after practice. Yes, he was at the facility. I mean,
was he doing anything on the side fields?
It's kind of tough because they have a building in the way now. Like when they rebuild there's a new building right there.
Separates the practice field from those other fields.
So I haven't seen him down there, but he was down. He came up after practice, so he was at the facility today.
I like that. Ooh. That actually is encouraging that Christian Gonzalez isn't just like missing right now. That I like it. Should I read anything into that?
I mean, I'm sure he's been present throughout this. Like, if not, I think the tone from his teammates, from Mike Vrabel, would be different. Hasn't he also kind of earned the benefit of doubt throughout this, right? Like, I know it's obviously the timing's interesting because he misses the practice. His first practice he missed was against the Colts. The joint practice hasn't been active since. But the first 13 days of training camp, he was a full participant out there and was – you know, there was no questions about this.
Well, not to be Mr. Negative, but we had Matthew Judon present and sitting on a cooler and being disruptive, you know, so just being there doesn't always mean that it's a good thing, right? I mean,
but he practiced. He was a full participant. Christian Gonzalez was. I think that's
Judon never was.
Like, that's why I think he does deserve
for a week,
a little bit of benefit of the doubt. Yeah. Like, 13 straight practices, he was a full participant. And I know the timing's fishy and people are going to look into that, but for now, until we have reason to think otherwise, I think you can, it's totally okay to believe that this is injury related.
Well, Scotty Scheffler, I mean Justin Turpin, thank you so much for showing up.
Of course.
Looking smooth in the Nike hat and the white shirt, like you're about to go hit the links.
He does.
But great stuff. I'm getting more and more excited for this season, and hopefully we'll have Drake on Monday with Patriots Monday start here on WEEI. Appreciate you coming in,
thanks,
Justin.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
All right. 617-779-7937. Wilson Contreras is causing all sorts of havoc with your Boston Red Sox fans. We will get to that right after this. Oh, it is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtleib, Ken Laird. Three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. And your calls, 617-779-7937. By the way, later on the show, Jackson was down. Dale Ordway down over at Fenway Park to talk to some of the people by there. Speaking of Fenway, I'm sorry, but this legitimately makes me upset. One of my favorite restaurants, Sweet Cheeks. You guys ever go to Sweet Cheeks over at Fenway?
The barbecue place? No, I have not been in.
It's awesome. It's my favorite barbecue place in town, and they're shutting down in November. Restaurants left and right are shutting down now.
Rich's curse again.
Yeah. I guess so, but it's a tough industry anyway. But
Ted owned a barbecue. Ted was raised on barbecue.
I was. Yep. We had it 45 years.
What was the name of it? The Squeakly Pig?
It was the Rib Tickler.
The Rib Tickler. Yeah.
The Rib Tickler. I love that. I think I bought one of those in college.
It was, you know what? It made news up here when we went down and played the Carolina Panthers in the Super Bowl back in 2004. In February 2004, a lot of the Pats fans went out to the restaurant, and Senior, as we all affectionately call my dad, Senior, I'm Junior, just couldn't get enough of it, man. Just was on cloud nine with all the Pats fans.
Have him take over the Sweet Cheeks. Come on, let's go.
You know what? He's 87. I think he's winding down.
Can you barbecue, Ted?
I am not. I mean, I could, like my dad did. Sure, give me a big old pit, the rotating with the mesquite wood that we had, and I could do that. But I wouldn't call myself like a really good barbecuer of just with the regular grill.
Was he like an overnighter, your dad? Like, I mean, when you cook like barbecue, he's one of those guys that puts in the day before?
Yeah, that's it. So they, so ribs take about 4 hours. A brisket is about an 8 hour deal. So you cook throughout the night a lot of times because you have to.
Down at Houston cooking through the night.
Oh, it's brutal. Oh, brutal, brutal, brutal. So, but you put the fire. They used to have it for a long time. You put the fire, and all the wood would be outside. But you open it from the inside. But now, then we were able to get to the pit so that we could do both from the inside. But I mean, the smoke comes into the whole restaurant. I mean, if you visit the Rib Tickler, you're going to leave there smelling like barbecue. You just can't help it.
Great. Now I have to have barbecue for lunch.
Oh, dude, yeah, totally. There's a video. It's one of my all-time favorite, like, internet videos that come out because it's just pure joy. It might be 20 seconds long, but it's a Vince Wilfork. And he has one of those, like, cabinets that's got, like, 10 racks on it. And it's him flipping like five different racks of ribs in this thing. And he's dancing while he's doing it. Just like, this is his happy place, flipping those ribs. And it's just, to me, it's perfection. But the one thing about like Sweet Cheeks, and I'll say something nice about them because they're closing, is that, when, and this kind of goes with Dana Farber too, and what we did the past couple of days, is that when my wife was sick, there was a period where she, for a month, wasn't able to eat. Like, for a month, she had to, like, basically wasn't able to eat food. Ooh. It was awful. And then after that, for like a week or two, she had to just eat stuff that was only from the hospital. And somehow, one of the doctors had overheard Mary saying, when I get out of here, my first real meal is going to be Sweet Cheeks.
Nice.
And out of nowhere, someone came by and dropped off like a huge gift certificate to Sweet Cheeks saying, we're glad your first meal will be on us. Cool. And so someone from Dana-Farber had told the Sweet Cheeks people, and the Sweet Cheeks people were nice enough to like, so our first meal, we just like stuffed our face with Sweet Cheeks barbecue.
That's unreal, man. Can I just acknowledge real quick just the involvement in the Jimmy Fund radiothon we had? Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to do it on yesterday's show, but it's incredible with the money that we were able to raise. Kudos to everybody involved. That was incredible. I've never been a part of an event. This is my second year. You talk about a well-oiled machine, and just the folks that are all part of that whole operation are top shelf, man. It just is incredible. I did not think we were going to beat last year's numbers.
No.
And not only did we beat it, we kind of cruised right on by it.
Kicked its butt.
We did. So, holy smokes.
Million and a half more. It's
very
crazy.
Very proud to be a part of that, guys. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with you guys those 2 days.
Just thanks to everybody who donated. I just, you know, you come away, you want to thank so many people, and then you forget the people who actually picked up the phone, gave money. Like, that's that awesome. A lot. So many people.
Yep.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, like, you know, it's funny because, like, I've seen a couple of the videos from some of the interviews go viral, like that Carson, like that Carson, little girl Carson.
Superstar.
Absolute superstar.
Oh, just the red dress? Oh,
yeah.
Adorable.
Yeah, she was great, and there were so many cool stories and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of blows me away. And as I said, you know, in a city full of people who, you know, scream at our athletes and, you know, bitch about everything, you know, for 2 days, everyone came together and went, yeah, cancer effing sucks. Let's fight it and let's do some good.
Yep. It took one day and this jack wagon behind the dugout is yelling at Wilson, you know, one day.
This story is so great because there's so many twists and turns with what's going on. Let's talk about that when we get back. So Contreras, you saw at the end of the game yesterday, he jawed with someone in the crowd. And we had a fan call in, someone who was there and saw all of it. And it started well before that. And now, do you think differently of Contreras? Or do you still think that, you know, this guy needs to stop yelling at people in the crowd? Maybe he needs to start running to first. We will get to all that, including his awesome description of what happened. Right after this, we will be right back. And let's talk Contreras. 617-779-7937. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurton, Leave Ken Laird. Ted Johnson, and a little bit of a kick in the nuts yesterday over at Fenway Park.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fun way to end this series. Listen, they ended up winning the series, but blowing the sweep. And to do it the way you did it, it's just like that slow, painful walking three guys in the 10th inning.
Right.
Just a awful, awful way to lose.
He has three dingers on the day. Hate to blow three dongs, you know. That's a game you should win.
Save that. But then there was there was also Mickey Gasper, who just, I mean, three games in a row, that's been awesome. And on top of that, you know, you've got a team now that is showing that this bullpen is just, it's tired. And they've got a...
Is that anybody's fault? Is that the manager's fault? The manager that you said we should be giving a lot of money to and make an interim manager, you know, take that tag off? Is he to blame at all for this?
Yes, nothing happened before that. There's nothing that happened this season before the bullpen got tired. You know, but it is a good question, though, Ted. I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, when you take a look at what you've got here, and even your starters, you know, a guy like Peyton Tolley, we've been talking about this. We asked Chad Tracy about it. Man, you got to... He's never pitched this much in a season, and it was really cool and really fun over the last couple of times he's been out there. I mean, the 14 strikeouts was great, and the way he's winning these games have been awesome. Yesterday was a little bit of a step back, but I mean, you know, even the good players, you've got a little bit of a question mark there. Like Aroldis Chapman, we've seen a little bit of a step back with him as well. And you're just wondering, you know, if Garrett Crochet doesn't come back, you know, are you, he would be, it would be an awesome person to just be able to plug in there in the relief spot.
Rich, if you wouldn't mind, since you just brought him up, I'd like to play the answer. I asked Chad Tracy about Garrett Crochet, you know, it's just, yeah. I feel like he's been out of sight, out of mind, but you know, is this guy going to come back and contribute at all this season? And I asked him this question a couple days ago at the Radiothon, and this was his answer.
Hate to blow three dongs. And that's not the
that's right. Not it.
Come on.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't it.
No. That's a fact.
Sorry.
I mean,
my
was,
bad.
I didn't know
just
that
a
was.
Baseball fact.
They caught that on the air when he said that.
All right, here we go, Ted.
Are you expecting anything from Garrett Crochet this season?
I hope so. For me to say right now, yeah, I expect this would be, you know, crazy just based on the fact that he is throwing again, but it's, you know, really short distance and increasing volume. So it's hard to say right now if I can say, oh yeah, we expect this. I think it would be better to say, like, if we end up getting him there, that becomes a really, really welcome addition if we can get there. That's probably a better way of wording it. And do I think that's going to have him built up to six innings? No, I don't even think the calendar will allow for that. But Garrett Crochet is elite when he's right. And if you get him right, and even if you were able to get him right and say, hey, he's built up to be able to go out there and throw three innings mm-hmm. or something, like, we'll take that. But it's just a matter of how he progresses along over the course of the next month.
I thought that was revealing.
Yeah, very much.
It's just basically, mm-hmm. yeah, he's going to, if he comes back, it's going to be just, you know, minor, you know, couple innings to three innings to expect him to ramp up where he can pitch six or more innings. Do not expect that from Garrett Crochet if and when he comes back.
A lot of good intel, Rich, over the course of the telethon, including off-the-record Cam Neely, Ted Johnson conversations that I don't know what was said, but those two were just chopping it up in the corner.
Yeah. Cam and I go way back.
What is happening there?
Yeah, you know. It's a lot of fun. I didn't see Cam's one of my favorite guys, so yeah, I'll tell you when I see you next, Rich. Off air.
I want to hear it. Were you laughing about Craig Breslow saying that Durbin was a warrior because his pinky was hurt?
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. Although I did get a chuckle out of that. It was funny when that first was mentioned. I thought the long kind of awkward pause was about something different. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe about a player down in Florida getting rehab to come back and play.
Yeah.
I thought it was more about that than it was. Cam getting a nice chuckle out of that is good for him because hockey players are a different breed, those guys.
They are. And it's really absurd some of the stuff that they play through. And by the way, that's not knocking Durbin. It's just it was kind of funny how he throws that out there and all of a sudden, as I said, it was like a Beavis and Butthead moment. I saw Cam over there and just goes,
really, bro? Like, seriously, Craig? All right, man.
But what happened at the end of yesterday's game is getting a lot of talk because there's controversy involving Wilson Contreras. I mean, this guy obviously, you know, is looked at as the leader of the team. And yesterday you saw another situation where he got booed. He had a ground out. He was the second out of that inning, the final inning. And neither
Nesson nor our guys caught that in the moment, by the way. It was so quick. If there was booing, it wasn't like that audible. I'm not sure it was happening. I'm not doubting that.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I didn't know this happened until afterward.
Yeah, me too. As a matter of fact, I was listening to it on the radio, and I didn't hear it like on the broadcast, but I mean, it's something that obviously was reported. But what was you could see was that when Wilson Contreras was coming back to the dugout, he started having words with somebody that was in the stands. Now, until earlier in the show, we actually found one of the fans that was right next to everything that was going on, Kristen Mulrooney. And she said that this had started well before Wilson Contreras was out there. There was a guy that was in like the fourth or fifth row, and he was screaming at the pitchers. By the way, like Garrett Whitlock, a guy who didn't even pitch. Like it was Garrett Whitlock, right. And I forget who the other one.
The Jimmy Fund captain. He's getting yelled at. He's not even in the game. Like,
right, geez. Right. So this guy's apparently saying something. According to her, it wasn't over the line. It was just more like, you suck. And, you know, they just watched a guy get walked in. I mean, it's been awful. The pitching was pretty bad. So they're sitting there, and this guy is yelling at Garrett Whitlock, and Garrett Whitlock turns around and puts his back to the field and just gives this guy the death stare along with one of the other pitchers. I forget which one it was. And they're standing next to him. They're just looking at him.
Sandoval.
That's right. It was Sandoval and Whitlock. And so here comes Wilson Contreras off the field, and he sees that this dude is continuing to yell at his pitchers and kind of gets into the situation and just looks at the guy and goes, like, according to our witness, what are you doing, man? Come on, man. What are you doing? It wasn't like he wasn't yelling at this dude, this fan, and saying anything bad. He was more like, just give it up. But the best part of that story that I thought was so fantastic was that I guess during the back and forth, not even a back and forth, while this guy was yelling at Garrett Whitlock and like it was getting louder and louder, Jaren Duran comes walking up from the dugout getting ready to do a Jaren Duran to turn around and start screaming at the guy. But in a moment of pure growth, walks up and then walks right back down and does nothing.
You're right. That's actually probably the biggest news of the whole thing. Yeah. It's just that's good for Duran.
That's good for Duran. But here is what Contreras had to say about the back and forth of the fan. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, and nothing was inviting me to dinner. You know, I was like, no. I was like, nah. I'm good with that.
Okay.
Huh?
Where are we going? Good
to go. I don't know. He was just inviting me to a dinner. He didn't name any specific place or restaurant. So.
Okay. And by the way, I've said you have a right to yell whatever you want at the players as long as it's not over the line or it's profane. But I mean, the dude's doing it next to his kid. Come on, what a loser!
Dude, that's what you see at Philly games. You know, that's the Philly. Come on, man. We're better than the Philly fans,
right,
aren't we?
Right.
Just doing it next to his kid. Hey, kid, let me show you how I rouse these guys up. Guess what? He's going to I bet Duran comes over here and calls me something gay.
Are we Boston fans or are we not Boston fans? I'm so confused. Like, that, of course, you bring your kid to the game. You yell. You have fun. I don't know. And the girl, Kristen, who we had on, even she said, she was like, yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because, like, the fan wasn't really saying anything that crazy.
But according to Kristen, the guy was doing it for, like, an entire inning. Like, right. It's one thing if you stand up and you bust someone's balls after they just blew a play or something like that. But at some point, you're the a-hole in your section. Like, you know, you're the dude that's like, shut up, dude, sit down. Or, you know, as I said, he's got every right to do it. It doesn't mean I don't have every right to think you're a dumbass or an a-hole for doing it next to me while I'm trying to watch the game. So, Contreras, though, there's the other side of it, and that is him not running out that grounder. Now, when we talked to Chad Tracy and asked him about Wilson Contreras last week when he was booed the first time, he told us that Contreras was absolutely not 100%. Remember, this was a couple days after he got nailed in the head, and I guess he's dealing with leg problems as well. And they had a discussion, and the discussion was, hey, we would love for you to play. And Wilson Contreras is like, I want to play. It's just I'm not 100%, so just know that there might be moments where I'm just not able to do it. And that kind of goes hand in hand with what we saw last night. So here's what Wilson Contreras said about not running out that grounder.
I'm not going to get here running a ground ball. And if you're a real fan and you know baseball, there's no case for me to hold out of the box. I'm not 100%. We never are, but I'm taking care of my leg. If you have to run, I'll push a little bit. If I don't, my manager have my back, and I talked to him, and he gave me the permission just to to do whatever it takes to take care of my legs, and that's it. But I mean, I just don't care.
I wish this wasn't like. I hope this doesn't become a big thing because it's really.
The more evidence that's rolling in, including our caller, I am Team Wilson. Not a big deal.
Yeah, it's
Team
not a big deal. Let's like chill out. I mean, there's fans that don't know his injury history, so they're just reacting to what they see. But hopefully that'll subside after we've talked about it enough. The guy's got injuries. He's got issues he's dealing with. So give him a break on it, and hopefully that won't be a major storyline as we get closer to the playoffs.
Well, Lou Merlone tweeted last night. He said, I'll just say this. If people really knew what Wilson Contreras has dealt with throughout the year, all the blank he plays through, they'd be embarrassed for being upset at him for not running out a routine ground ball once in a while. Yeah. So does Lou know something we don't? I mean, obviously we know he's injured. I mean, Chad told us he was injured.
What was that? There's one guy that's bothered by this, and it's Stanley Stiz Grimey.
When I read that Lou thing, and I love Lou. Lou's the best. Don't get me wrong. But like, if you only knew.
That is a little. It is a tiny bit condescending. You're right about
he's
that.
He's an insider.
And then Wilson himself. I love Lou, too. Yeah.
Sorry, Rich, but even Wilson himself, you're not a real fan if you. And then at the end of it, he's like, I don't care. You know what? I don't care.
Yeah, I think Stiz makes some good points. I mean, he's right, too. So I have a hard time.
Take his side.
But I don't have a – I will say this. At the end, part of me is my how I really, really feel leans more towards how Stiz is saying it. But I also – can understand the athlete side, but the average fan isn't going to know his injury history. They're just going to see him not running out.
Hustle. And like hustle is like, you know, one of those classic sports words that you all want your sports guys to have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he's not hustling, I mean, what the hell? What the hell are we paying him for?
Well, I mean, but what if that extra sauce ends up, you know, screwing up his leg? I don't know.
Tears his hamstring and a 5-foot
right.
ground out.
Listen,
I hustle every day. I don't tear hairs.
You what? You hustle every day. What was your arrival time today? 1:58.
I think I almost got hit by you in the parking garage.
I'm the last guy to bust balls on that.
That's right. I see this car, and you might have gone the entire length of the parking garage in reverse yesterday. Did you not, Jackson?
Yeah.
What?
Hell,
I was pulling in, and I was halfway in, and all
of a
sudden,
stole my parking spot, you ass! I didn't know that was you.
You passed it, and I like you had passed the spot, so I pulled in, and all of a sudden, I see this car go like 100 miles an hour in reverse.
I was going very slowly, but I went to the one across from you. I was fine.
Okay. Oh, good. So there was another one, so I didn't steal it. There was a second one for you. All right. Well, that's fun. 617-779-7937. We are in the Catch a Slaw studios. No fee unless you win. Guess who's joining us? A real star, Mr. Tom E. Curran.
Ooh.
He'll give us all the latest on the Patriots right after.